Thanks, Cathy. Please do sit down. That would have been a lovely passage to preach on, wouldn't it, from John? But no, I'm not. I've been asked to do the second in our series from one of the prophets, and today we're going to look at Micah, of which I suspect you know very little about, because I didn't know much about him until I sort of did some reading around. But here we go. Micah. What we have in this little book, and it's about seven chapters, I think, is a message of very hard, difficult news, but also a message of hope. And lovely, we have a hope with us this morning. And we'll see that, and I'm going to take you through some of that. But let me just show you a couple of pictures, because we are surrounded at the moment by difficult news, aren't we? We see this kind of picture, Palestine, Kiev, other parts of Ukraine, all over the world, stuff is happening which unsettles us, to say the least. At home, we see things like this, and food banks, other things like that, rising, things are just not getting better. We see this as well, queues outside our A&Es. Yet, despite all of that, we do have those seeds of hope. There are things that we can see, which we can celebrate, which we can say, yeah, things are, yeah, they're difficult, they're bad, but there are still some seeds of hope. And I suspect this is exactly what we're going to think about with Micah. Now, Micah himself lived in a small town. You can see it. I'm going to move to the microphone here. In the kingdom of Judah, at that time, Israel was split into two main kingdoms. There was Judah and also Samaria, often called Israel, to the north. And Micah lived in Judah, in a town called Moresheth. And at the same time, Isaiah, who we know as one of the main prophets in the Old Testament, was living in Jerusalem at the same time. So a lot of these prophets overlapped each other and were interestingly saying the same kind of thing. And what Micah was warning was basically Israel, Judah, those whole two kingdoms were, for want of a better word, violating the agreement that God made with Israel. They were just going against him, basically, and doing the kind of things that God didn't want them to do. And he warned that in due course, there would be a great nation, Assyria, would come and basically destroy them and overturn them, Israel, take them into exile, which actually did happen. And you know from your, if you know any of your history, those big empires came and went, but all of them did this kind of stuff with Israel over history. And so most of this book of Micah explores Micah's accusations and warnings of the judgment on Judah and Samaria. But he also brought a message of hope and told of restoration. Now, I guess that at some point in our lives, we've all been let down, haven't we, by someone, whether that's in our home life, whether that's in church life, work life, whatever it is. We've felt aggrieved, we've felt angry, disappointed, whatever, all sorts of things. Now, similarly, the prophet is commenting on God's reaction to being let down by his people, who he developed a relationship over thousands, hundreds of years. So Micah, interestingly, didn't hold back. He went for first the priests and the prophets and the secular leaders. And we know from reading Micah that there was greed, there was all kinds of different things and theft going on. So let me just read you a couple of passages which give you a flavor of some of the things that were happening. So this is from Micah 3. Hear this, you leaders of Jacob, you rulers of Israel, who despise justice and distort all that is right, who built Zion with bloodshed and Jerusalem with wickedness. Her leaders judge for a bribe, her priests teach for a price, and her prophets tell fortunes for money. Yet they look for the Lord's support and say, is not the Lord among us? No disaster will come upon us. Therefore, because of you, Zion will be ploughed like a field, and Jerusalem will become a heap of rubble, and the Temple Hill a mound overgrown with thickets. He didn't hold back, did he? And he went for it. And then he didn't just go for the leaders, the prophets and the priests. He also went for the people. And so in Micah 7, he says this, what misery is mine? I'm like the one who gathers summer fruit at the gleaning of the vineyard. There's no cluster of grapes to eat, none of the early figs that I crave. The faithful have been swept from the land. No one upright person remains. Everyone lies in wait to shed blood. They hunt each other with nets. Both hands are skilled in doing evil. The ruler demands gifts, the judge accepts bribes, the powerful dictate what they desire. They all conspire together. The kind of place you want to live, isn't it, really? It's not a pleasant place at all. However, in the midst of all of that, there's still, as I said before, there's still that picture of those spring flowers, hope. A little later on in 7. But who is a God like you, who pardons sin and forgives the transgression of the remnant of his inheritance? You do not stay angry forever, but delight to show mercy. You'll again have compassion on us. You'll tread off sins underfoot and hurl all our iniquities into the depths of the sea. You'll be faithful to Jacob and show love to Abraham, as you pledged an oath to our ancestors in long ago. So that gives you a flavour, really, of what was happening in Micah. Desperate stuff, but still hope. So what can we take away from that? Because that's really, really important. We can read all that stuff, and that was written, you know, I don't know if it's about 600, 700 years before Christ. Can't remember my history, my biblical history, but it was that kind of period. So what can we take away? You had that lovely verse, didn't you, right at the end of our reading that was read to us just before. Do justly. What does God require of us? To do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly. You know, it's, to me, compassion should be at the heart of all that we do, all that we are. That undergirds the Christian gospel, undergirds all that God is, all that Christ is, and when Christ came. So it's the heart also of all the major faiths as well. So it's not just Christianity that has that. Compassion is at the heart of all things. But we're here as Christians. And our challenge is, how do we work this out here at St. James? I was reminded of a song that Tony and Jackie mentioned to me some months ago, by Stuart Townsend, called The Vagabonds. And at one day, I hope we're going to sing this, because it's such an amazing song, and I'm going to read you some of it. If I'd have planned this properly, rather than writing this towards the end of the week, as I do, we could have had some of it played through the system. But anyway, John, you might be able to find it later. Yeah, who knows? But not now. No, don't worry. But it's really interesting. Come all you vagabonds, come all you don't belongs. Winners and losers, come people like me. Come all you travellers, tired from the journey. Come wait a while, stay a while, welcomed you'll be. Come to the feast, there's room at the table. Come let us meet in this place with the King of all kindness, who welcomes us in with the wonder of love and the power of grace. The wonder of love and the power of grace. Come those who worry about houses and money, on all those who don't have a care in the world. From every station and orientation, the helpless, the hopeless, the young and the old. So it goes on, I won't go read it all. But that's the kind of community that I think I would want to see here, and want us to grow into more and more. And I think we're beginning to do that, aren't we? I think one of the things I noticed about this place is just how welcome people feel when they come in. And they say that. There's been a couple who have been here just, I thought they were coming this morning, but they've been here the last 2 weeks, who were just coming to, I think, help out a daughter, and they live somewhere in Kent, I think it was. And And they said that's the first thing they noticed when they came in here. Didn't know anything about this place at all, but the welcome that they received. You are welcome here, wherever you're from, whoever you are. Whatever you've done, you're welcome here. I think there's also an imperative on our secular leaders to follow these compassion principles, particularly for the powerless and the poor. And we know that later on this year, we've got a general election, and we have an opportunity there to both interrogate our political classes and in the end to be able to use the vote, that democratic right we have, to vote wisely for whoever it is we feel that will bring that kind of thing to pass in our society. So compassion is the first thing. The second thing, in terms of implication from this, is this. Hang on to the hope of better things to come. All of us, and I mean all of us, experience dark times. And we do it personally. Nationally, we have experienced dark times. Internationally. And at some point, we all experience mental torture, disease, emotional pain, spiritual dryness, whatever it is. And it can feel like the rug's being pulled from underneath us, isn't it? I don't know if you... I'm sure you've all been in that place at some point where you just think, heck, what's happening all around me? I'm at a loss. Nothing is as it should be. Feels almost like, you know, sand that you pour into your hand sort of disappears through your fingers. And life, for many, is a struggle, isn't it? We saw the pictures of just the public services there. It's a struggle with many people waiting for operations, for example, or whatever it is, and often our services at the moment seem to be at rock bottom, even though those who are working in those public services are working their socks off to try to do whatever they can. And so we should be praying, I think, for our leaders, for courage and compassion for them to really deal with some of those core issues that are around. And internationally, we are sitting on a knife edge, aren't we? And I'm sure you're feeling that at the moment as you look at the recent stuff that's happening within Iran and Israel. And again, we should be praying for great wisdom for those who are behind the scenes working to try and bring that kind of peace that we all want to see. So those are the things I think that we can be doing and thinking about and praying about. But let me conclude, and I don't want to leave you with a note of despair. I'd like us to have some hope. And in the middle of this, you know, there is still a small voice of calm. That lovely hymn, "Breathe through the heats of our desire, thy coolness and thy balm. Let sense be dumb, let flesh retire, speak through the earthquake, the wind and the fire, O still small voice of calm." Amen.
Thank you, Ian. So I'd like to invite us to stand for our next hymn, which I think just really reflects really well what Ian has just told us. Thank you.
So we're going to sing this song, "O Lord, the Clouds Are Gathering." I was struck by how much of what Micah said resonates today. And this song is actually going to reflect some of those things also that resonate today, what we see going on around in our world. But it finishes with a verse which is full of hope, which is all about our hope in God through Jesus.